Welcome to the first Temp Fans podcast. Temporary Fandom started life as a Facebook group where a steadily growing number of people would gather in order to listen to and talk about complete discographies. For days, weeks, and on rare occasions, sometimes even months, we'd listen exclusively to the work and evolution of a single artist. All of it. Even the notoriously shitty records by some of our favourite performers. 5 years after a small handful of friends decided it would be a good idea to listen to every single record by the fall, we're finally launching the Temp Fans podcast. Whereas what came to be known as immersions usually happened over several consecutive days, the podcast will allow you to take on artists' discographies at your own pace. The thing is, you don't have to be a fan. This isn't some kind of love-in where we all gush about records we think are wonderful, although that does sometimes happen. Instead, being a temporary fan means taking on the mantle of a devotee by listening somewhat obsessively in the hope that you might come to understand what you love about a record. Or, conversely, why some artists just leave you cold. Sometimes, partway through an immersion, you'll have an epiphany when you suddenly get what everyone has been banging on about. Other times, you'll be left frustrated that bands just don't give you that elusive thrill. But why? Damned if we know. We've listened to the complete discographies of over 100 artists, and I still don't know why some pieces of music move me in ways that others never will. And yet we listen. Because for idiots like us, finding an old record to get excited about is every bit as captivating as hearing something completely new. Personally, I find it reassuring that despite all our efforts, we'll go to our graves without having heard all the great pieces of music out there. But it won't be for lack of trying. So join us as we attempt to heave the format that has worked so well as a rambling Facebook group into the world of podcasts. We'll try not to fuck it up, and we hope you'll enjoy it too. And, more importantly, discover some really great records.
Yep, hopefully we won't fuck it up. Hey, I'm Ewan.
And I'm Nick.
And so this is us trying not to fuck it up with Temporary Fandoms, the podcast or playcast or pod list. We're not quite sure what it's called yet. So Nick, what is a temporary fandom?
Okay, so basically what we do at Temporary Fandoms is it's a Facebook group where we listen to complete discographies. So you choose an artist we love or are interested in just and listen to every single studio album that they made.
Only the studio albums? Like not like usually, live albums or
there are, you know, the rules are loose on that. It's sort of down to whoever's running it to decide. Because yeah, there are definitely artists where there are kind of live albums that seem important. But I guess the reason in general we don't do live albums, because there are other bands where they'll have like 20 live albums that you really don't need to listen to.
Grateful Dead.
Especially if you've got 30 studio albums to get through.
So if anybody suggests doing Fish or something like that, because I think Fish are one of those...
I think it's they've been mentioned, yeah. But
I think have about a gazillion live albums.
Right.
Okay, so
for
you
example, mean... we did Talking Heads, that was a great emotion. And I think their second or third album that we did was a live album. That fit, it made sense in the kind of flow of the records we were doing. But a lot of other times, live albums...
Okay. So you mentioned Talking Heads as one of the ones that's been done. Over the years, what can you give me examples of the range of artists?
Absolutely. We've done everything from sort of David Bowie to the Bottle Surfers via Aretha Franklin and Stevie Wonder. We
also did Gay Bikers and Acid, which I somehow managed to win, come third in a vote to get done. Ha ha, suckers. Apart from Gay Bikers and Acid, what was your low light? let's start with the low light, and then we'll finish on a high.
I enjoyed Gay Bikers and Acid, not as much as I would like to.
You did describe them as a dog's dinner of a band, but that's fair enough.
But a lot of the bands I like are dog's dinners. It's a, you know, I'm kind of a dog's dinner guy. Let me think. So once it didn't work so well for me, I was very disappointed that I didn't connect with XTC, because they were an example of a band that I thought going in that the immersion would kind of crack them for me, because I was convinced that they were just a band that a lot of people whose taste I kind of respect and generally agree with seem to love. So I thought, well, there must be something there. And
I'm having a really stupid moment, and in my head I'm now conflating XTC and 10cc, and like, which ones were I'm Not in Love?
That's 10cc.
Which ones were Dreadlock Holiday?
That's also 10cc.
Who were XTC? What did XTC do?
XTC, yeah, Making Plans for Nigel.
Making plans for Nigel. That was the third one I was about to ask, and then yeah. I thought, no, I'm not having three strokes. Okay, so that was XTC. Didn't quite work. About
that band, and you know, it was a successful immersion in that, you know, the people who liked it, but there are kind of, you know, you're kind of often hoping for the breakthrough. Yeah.
Who didn't you finish?
Ooh, I don't know if I want people to know.
Yeah, come on.
Okay, there is somewhere my interest waned very strongly. I didn't quite make it to the end of Madonna, I have to say. I may have dutifully played the records, but I think I was totally disengaged by the end of that.
I didn't either. I got to a...
But I'm glad we did it.
1990, I think.
Yeah, me too. It was nice. It was also, it gave me a week off.
Yeah, there are no weeks off at Temporary Fandoms, Ewan.
Yeah, apparently so. Although,
sometimes there are.
When Bob Dylan comes back for the second part, there are some weeks off.
That out.
And what was apart from today's? Yeah. What was your big highlight? What was the one you went, whoa, hello?
So one I really enjoyed was Kraftwerk. That was a band that went from sort of being just the kind of respect as a kind of important band, but not something I would listen to much, to genuine love. Like by the end of that immersion, I really, really liked Kraftwerk. It helped that I saw them live around the same time as we did the immersion.
Oh, yeah, that's not perfect.
But yeah, that was a great one. And also, it must be a Krautrock thing because I really came to love Can as well. And again, though, I suspected I would beforehand, but I'd never, you know, put in the time.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what the emotions are kind of good for as well. There are just bands out there that you think, yeah, I think I like this band, but I haven't really, you know, I don't really know what records they made or when they made them.
Yeah, of course.
It's kind of sorting that stuff out. Makes you really good at pub quizzes.
And hopefully you will stick around for that chance to improve your very obscure pop pub quiz knowledge. So we're going to shove this out in a couple of formats, and depending where you found this might depend on what format you're currently listening to. We're going to have the normal podcast, standalone, single episode. Doesn't really come with any music though. Rights, music rights, God, nightmare. And we're going to have the Spotify version, which is a playlist with curated songs in between the album introductions, sort of like a follow-along curation. And we invite you to come over to the Facebook group at the end of all this and make your voice and your opinions known. All right, I caught up with Zoe, who was the curator for the first immersion, and we'll be back right after this.
So, hey, Zoe.
Hi. How's it going?
Fine. I mean, obviously, we have to mention that we recorded this during the global pandemic and everything's a little bit weird, but
yeah, fine. Why don't we just mention it first and then
mention it done.
Again? Right. Yeah. So global pandemic.
So just so we know, where are you calling from? Where did I catch you?
Well, I'm calling from Hong Kong. I live here. I've lived here for a very long time, on and off. So I first came here when I was very small, so it's very familiar to me. But I guess I'm originally from the UK, and that's also very familiar to me too. So, yeah, it's not that interesting, really.
And very quickly, who are the band? What's this immersion?
Okay, so I'm really passionate about this band. They're called ESG. They are from New York. And they were originally made up of four sisters who basically taught themselves how to play.
So I guess with every band, sometimes there's an interesting story about when you first heard them. Sometimes it's just they were on the radio. When did ESG enter your sphere of knowledge or whatever?
Well, I think it was about the early 2000s, which I think is quite late to come to ESG because they've been going since the late 70s, or they started in the late 70s. So it's really quite a late discovery for me. But they were kind of trendy. They had been sampled a lot, and I was going out with someone who listened to a lot of hip hop. So I knew who they were, and I'd heard a few tracks of theirs. But when I decided to do an immersion, I was looking for a band where I thought there was something interesting there, but maybe I didn't know so much about them. I wanted to explore, and then I could do it with other people as well, so we could kind of explore their discography together.
So you were talking about them being heavily sampled. As far as I'm aware, it's mainly the track UFO. So I've got three questions for you, really. Why... let's rephrase it. How sampled is it? How popular a track has it been?
It's been sampled loads. I can't remember, but obviously if you go to who sampled, it's in the hundreds. It's like something like 300 or 400 tracks that it's been sampled by. I can check if you really want the figure, but I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a lot.
And why do you think this track particularly has lent itself to being sampled so much? And added on to that, the final point would be, it's a bit of a weird track when you listen to it for it to have been so influential.
Well, it is a weird track. And the thing is that it almost didn't get recorded. It only got recorded because there was some tape left over. Yeah, we're going back to the time where they used to record to tape, literally to tape. So there was tape left over. And the producer said, got anything else? And I think this was Renee Scroggins' kind of baby. She liked this weird guitar sound song that she was doing. I don't think the rest of the band liked it very much. They were like, oh, don't do that one. But they did it anyway, just to use up the tape. And so that's how it got recorded. Now, as to how it became sampled so much, maybe it just happened to be, it was at that time where sampling was just starting to take off. I guess, not sampling. It was at that time where DJs were starting to use that kind of two turntables thing to move.
And
so carry on. Yeah.
So do you think that it's one of those things that because it got sampled and was sampled quite a lot, therefore people wanted to sample it more?
Exactly. Once somebody decides to take something and sample it and it becomes a thing, especially in hip hop, then other people will reference back to that. But it has got a really interesting sound. I mean, it's really kind of incongruous with the other stuff. So it's just a bit of a weird track. And obviously someone picked up on it. And I think especially if you speed up the track, it lends itself very nicely to a sort of hip hop feel.
Talking about the different speeds thing, I have gone and listened to UFO, and then there was UFO on either 45 RPM. So there was the two different speeds. And I listened to the two. And I will say that the slightly faster one was one that definitely I found more interesting. But this is something I'm coming in blind to. I've deliberately not listened to the whole discography yet because I missed the initial Facebook immersion. So I guess I'm going to ask you, what do you think my reactions are going to be based on how other people reacted, and were you happy with how the initial Facebook immersion went?
Well, I was really surprised that a lot of people hadn't heard of ESG, and that was the biggest shock to me because I was relatively new to the group, and I thought I was going into a group of people who knew everything. Like, honestly, I was a bit intimidated, and I'm thinking they're going to go, all right, yeah, ESG, I've been there, done that, kind of thing. So it was a very pleasant surprise to have, I would say, 80% of the group going, who, ESG? So that was lovely because it was like we were all discovering at the same time, and that was great. It is quite a weird immersion. I mean, it is quite a weird progression. There's some interesting stuff along the way, but they're just one of those bands that really are kind of doing their own thing. So I think you'll just have this feeling of like, I liked some of that, and some of that I don't know. They're a bit like that.
I think I'm looking forward to it purely because, as you said, it's something I didn't know of before this. I had seen on the Facebook group lots of people going, oh, yeah, the ESG immersion was great. And I just kept thinking, who? I mean, as far as I was aware, they could have sounded like Shonen Knife or any band from anywhere in the world. I mean, I knew nothing. So basically, I guess it's probably time to get started. So what we'll do is we'll play a quick sting and then we'll hand it over to you to introduce everything. Sound good?
Sounds great. Can't wait.
Awesome. See you in a bit.
ESG were, initially, a band made up of four teenage sisters, plus a friend on congas, from the South Bronx in New York. They formed in the late 1970s, released their first record in 1981, and were still releasing material as recently as 2017. The current incarnation of ESG features the children of original members, and they're still touring. If you think you've never heard a scrap of ESG, you're probably wrong. If you've heard any of the following tracks, Ain't No Half-Stepping, Big Daddy Kane, Yes Sir, MF Doom featuring Raekwon, Return of the Mac, Mark Morrison, Night of the Living Bassheads, Public Enemy, Let's Ride, Q-Tip, R.I.P., Prodigy, Take a Rest, Gangstar, Putting Shame in Your Game, Beastie Boys, Fantasy, Miles Davis, Metal, Nine Inch Nails, Lesson 4, DJ Shadow, 100 Miles and Running, N.W.A., New Jack Hustler, Ice-T, Cutting Rhythms, Tone Loc, Story to Tell, Ja Rule, Made You Look, Apache Remix, Nas, The Bomb, Ice Cube, Versus, Burial, Get Away, De La Soul, That's the Way We Like. It's the late 70s in New York, specifically the South Bronx, which has the dubious honour of being seen as the murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault and arson capital of America throughout this decade and the next. The heart has been ripped out of this community by the Cross Bronx Expressway, and buildings are constantly burning due to almost complete urban neglect and decay, fire insurance scams, and a skewed compensation policy that actually manages to encourage arson by residents. In the midst of this, Ma Scroggins, the matriarch of a large family, wants to keep her four younger girls away from gang violence and early pregnancy. She's seen her older children get into trouble with crime and drugs, so when the younger ones express an interest in playing music, she sees it as a way to keep them occupied. All her savings go into buying them instruments. Yes, all the New York clichés. All of them, all at once. Let's go on. There's no money left for music lessons, so the Scroggins girls practice at home. They soak up the rhythms of the Bronx, the sounds from block parties where DJs concoct sets from old funk records, looping James Brown breaks to keep the crowd dancing, the clatter of Latin percussion being played in the park at night, the playground chants and disco hooks. They try to cover their favourite tunes by using their cheap percussion, guitar, drums and a bass, but they soon realise that to expedite things, it's easier to write their own songs. That way, no one knows if you mess up while playing them. When Ma Scroggins feels they're ready, she enters the teenage sisters into various local talent contests. The judge of one of these contests is Ed Bauman, the owner of 99 Records. Releases include Liquid Liquid, Glenn Branca, Bush Tetras, Maximum Joy. They don't win the contest, but Bauman takes them under his wing as a sort of unofficial manager and starts booking them at New York alternative clubs like Hurrah and the Mud Club, as well as disco venues like Danceteria and the legendary Paradise Garage. When A Certain Ratio play New York, they share the bill with ESG. Tony Wilson, the manager of Factory Records, asks the girls if they'd like to make a one-off record for him. 3 days later, they're in the studio, recording with prolific producer Martin Hannett. Joy Division, New Order, Stone Roses, Happy Mondays, Magazine, Jurity Column, A Certain Ratio, OMD, Buzzcocks, U2, Need I Go On. ESG record two songs, You're No Good and Moody. They still have a few minutes of tape left, so Martin Hannett asks them if there's any more material, just to use up the reel. They decide on a song called UFO. The end result of this session is the first side of ESG's eponymous EP. The other side is three songs from a live set. Recording with Factory helps Ed Bauman form a partnership with the label. ESG release on Factory and subsequently 99 Records. They go on to release another EP called ESG Says Dance to the Beat of Moody in 1982. These tracks are on the next album, so only seek it out if you don't mind hearing it again. Also, some of these songs will pop up on later albums, but I think it's important to hear this EP first to get a feel for what it was that Ed Bauman and Tony Wilson saw in ESG. I'd like to start this with a quote from Renee Scroggins. The block parties were happening and stuff, and the DJs were playing Moody and UFO, and they didn't even know we made it. Because of the factory label, they thought ESG came from London. They playing it downstairs, and we living upstairs. Come Away With ESG consists of previously released singles and newer material to make up ESG's first long player. By this time, Moody had been released as a single and also as a 12-inch remix. Both ended up doing well in the clubs. Due to the factory imprint, DJs in the US just assumed ESG were a London-based act. New York City nightclub The Paradise Garage listed the song in its top 50 all-time tracks, as did The Gallery, The Warehouse, The Music Box and The Roxy. It was a significant track within the emerging house music scene and has become an underground dance classic. Come Away With ESG is arguably ESG's best album. Both Kathleen Hanna and Jennifer Harima have cited it as an influence on their work, but you can probably hear shades of ESG in numerous other bands who've echoed their minimalist swagger. It's worth mentioning that as well as hip-hop and house, there was a two-way street of inspiration going on in punk circles too. ESG also came into their own as a live act. As regulars on the happening New York live scene, they were a good choice to appear on the bill with The Clash and Grandmaster Flash. Renee says, "That was at Bond's. It was famous because the fire marshals used to come in the whole time and try to shut the place down. The first night we opened the show, the crowd drenched The Clash in beer. It was cool pay, but we didn't want to get drenched because we were just starting and we didn't have money for new instruments. And they left our instruments up there and we were like, save the drums." Thanks to Tony Wilson, ESG also played opening night at the Hacienda in 1982. Renee is adamant that the Factory Records connection was an important milestone. Here's Renee again. Years after their previous record, ESG release ESG the Album. ESG is a mix of old and new material. Moody and UFO pop up again, so you could call it a cash-in, but in order for it to be that, they would have needed paying properly in the first place. In 1986, just as ESG were on the cusp of mainstream success, 99 Records folded, which meant the band had no label and no manager. 99 Records went bust after they tried to sue Sugar Hill Records for using a sample by Liquid Liquid, only to be left with the court costs when Sugar Hill went bankrupt. Here's Renee. Ed Bauman was our first manager, and hey, I love Ed. Ed was great, but he was also running the 99 label. And what happened was, the White Lines case with Liquid Liquid's Cavern, Sugar Hill Records put out White Lines sampling Liquid Liquid without permission. And after that, Ed just became so disenchanted with the business. He went and did the whole case, and he won. And then Sugar Hill went into bankruptcy, so he lost all that money. And it was horrible. He also used all the artist's money on the label. Ed and I, we'd kept in touch for a long while after, when many other artists didn't know where he was. Ed lives in Brooklyn now, and you can't even get him to talk about those years. You could ask him anything, but don't ask him anything to do with 99. ESG are not fans of sampling, justifiably so. But perhaps it's not sampling that's the problem. If you sample another artist and find success, as long as there is a fair distribution of funds, as well as crediting and recognition, then everyone should be happy. What happened to ESG was that they didn't get paid, often weren't credited, and were working their day jobs and raising children while their music was being appropriated all over the place, and they watched others get rich off the back of it. And the way in which their music was being used was less than. I'm still saying to myself, don't these guys realise that women wrote this music? And yet you're calling every woman a bitch and a whore and treating them like garbage? And they're using my music to write their beats? That's what I don't like, because I do not support what they're saying. We don't find out about it until after the fact, and then they want to fight you about your music. And it's like, okay, you've already insulted me once and now you're insulting me again. I don't appreciate it. It even got to the point where people would talk to them after gigs and ask about the cover versions they'd just performed, not knowing they were the originators. A bit like saying to Stevie Wonder how much you like his cover of that Coolio song. When Renee was asked if she thinks things would have been different if ESG had been, say, white guys, she says, "Of course. Of course, we've had to fight sexism. We've had to fight, in some situations, racism. That has a lot to do with the clubs and the level of respect they gave you because you were a woman, because you were black." ESG's forte for making these bare-bones, extended, funky breaks was also their weakness. It made them extremely easy to sample, even down to the format of 12-inch records that in the early days could be looped to allow MCs to throw down over. The solid foundation they created allowed others to create on top of it. This album's mix of old and new is slightly jarring. Despite this, there are still good tracks on this album, originally released in 1991 on small independent Pow Wow Records. It was also re-released on Fire Records in 2011. The guitar takes a more prominent role, with varying degrees of success, and there is a branching out of sorts. Personally, I feel there's more chaff than wheat on this one. Once again, I'll leave it up to the listener to decide which is which. There are a couple of reasons why I've used lots of quotes in the past few album introductions. One is because there is very little information about ESG out there, apart from interviews with the band that mainly feature Renee and her accounts. Another reason is because they appear to be so often undocumented and ignored, it seems right to let the band members tell the story for themselves. This album, Step Off, from 2002, features a band lineup of second-generation Scroggins girls. Chastel, Valerie's daughter, who has an instrumental named after her on the first album, is on guitar, and Renee's daughter Nicole is on bass. Truly a family affair. By this time, there had been a resurgence in interest in ESG, mainly down to other artists declaring ESG's influence on their work, and also due to a compilation that was released in 2000 called A South Bronx Story. Step Off has more continuity than the last album. It doesn't deviate much from the ESG formula, but does have a surprise in the form of the almost a cappella It's Not Me, which sounds like the beginnings of a stonking house tune, but never actually goes there. Once again, ripe for sampling. Why do they do this to themselves? Also, Six Pack keeps that punk funk spirit alive. From here on out, we've got a few albums of variable quality. I'll leave it up to you to decide which is the most or least coherent, but I'll hazard there are still grooves to be enjoyed on each one. Minimalism is still used to good effect on Keep On Moving, but the lyrical simplicity on this album is either grating or endearing, depending on how you feel about the band. The percussion sounds great, and as always with ESG, they have ideas. It's the execution that's the issue. To me, this typifies both ESG's potential and restrictions. Their stop-start recording history, lineup changes, energy diverted into chasing sampling clearance, lone parenthood, and holding down day jobs have all contributed to a distinct lack of progression in one sense. We know they can come up with the goods, but one suspects that they need the right amount of support to see it through to the finished product. Even by 2006, getting paid those dues is still a struggle, and Renee has had to employ a company purely to chase up those samples. Here she is again. Every day, something new comes up. To me, that's horrible. To the people who clear it with us, thank you. To the people who don't, you're a pain in the ass, and I'm going to come after you. You're taking food out of my kids' mouths. Neglected for so long, while obviously compelled to keep making music, the fact that they didn't get nurtured or receive the deserved support at a crucial time means that they sound stuck in limbo between work that sounds like demo material and something more fully formed. This album was their second release on Soul Jazz, apart from the compilations, and Renee had this to say about them. Soul Jazz reminds me of when we first started out, someone being willing to put their faith in you. I think only independent labels have the balls to do these things. Over in the States, we got a bargain for every dollar we get. Unfortunately, it doesn't last. We're almost at the finish line with ESG. What a legacy. It's hard to think of another band who's had such an influence on hip-hop and dance music and indie music and also gives a nod to industrial and goth, yet remain niche. Why do they only have around 11,000 likes on Facebook? Surely it should be 10 times that or 100 times that. With Closure, we're now into self-release territory. And it shows, both in the production and the song selection, and check out the artwork as well. As far as I know, this album was called Closure, because at this point ESG were going to call it a day. Possibly because of Renee's knee injury, which was stopping her from performing live comfortably, but maybe the ongoing legal battles with sister and ex-member Deborah, as well as other music business woes, had taken their toll. In 2015, they had a spat with Fire Records over reinterpreted artwork for a re-release of the Moody EP, and I'm not sure what happened with Soul Jazz either. As for the album itself, you can often detect a poignancy in ESG's music. It's hard not to think of them as slightly outsider. There's a complete lack of pretense, a defiance, a simplicity, a bloody-mindedness, almost verging on the naive. For all my imaginations about what they could have been, given some investment and nurture, it's worth considering that a slick and polished ESG just might not work, that we would lose something, the thing that makes them unique. For these last two albums, I'm going to hold back on what I think, and leave it to you, the discerning listener, to decide. But I will say this, just when I'm about to step off, Strange Creatures Dance. What more can you take? 2017. We finish our ESG journey with another self-release. I'm sure you'll agree with me when I say it's been both joyful and strange. Ostensibly, ESG went away after Closure, but came back to do Glastonbury and Meltdown in 2014. Then this album came out in 2017, and new live dates kept popping up, even though they did a tour a couple of years ago, saying it would be their last one ever. So if you see an ESG date pop up, it's probably a good idea to go and see them. They have a good reputation for putting on a decent live show. If by now you've fallen in love with ESG, there are other releases to seek out. The Sample Credits EP, Bam Bam Jam 12-inch, Party Music 12-inch, which is a personal favourite, a few compilations, and ESG Live from 1995. While commercial success has eluded ESG, it's hard to imagine them wanting to shift units. Uncompromising, for better or worse, is a word that springs to mind. It comes down to how you measure success. They absolutely should be more well known and given the kudos they deserve for their lasting influence. They should be able to make a living from what they've done and do. But as Renee says, one of the greatest things I can say, and it truly made my mum proud, was that we were able to travel the world on our music. Also, to still be performing 40 years after forming is testament to ESG's tenacity. In my book, they're winning. As for the album itself, well, nobody cares what I think. It's up to you, the listener, so check it out, let us know.
You might be aware by now that we don't really know what we're doing. This is our first podcast. It's more of an attempt to see whether or not it works, and also to see whether we can learn how to edit stuff and make a podcast. Thanks to everyone involved so far: Nick, Zoe, Marianne, who you did not hear, but she sacrificed an entire few hours of a day to be part of a big ramble discussion that we just haven't been able to use this time. The format's probably going to change for the next podcast, but please come over to the Temporary Fandoms Facebook group, have a say, tell us what you think, tell us what we should do, tell us how to do it, and we'll see you there.